Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Ethan Weiss and Nick here with you. Before we get into everything that just transpired with the New York Football Giants, we got to take care of the housekeeping. Follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Nick at Nick Zeraris, the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, rate us 5 stars, leave us a kind review. All right, the Giants blow another double-digit lead on the road in the snow. Once again, against the Chicago Bears, leading to the firing of Brian Daboll, the retention of general manager Joe Shane, and around we go. The New York Giants not learning their lesson. No surprise. Gentlemen, how are we doing today?
A little bit surprised. I thought an in-season firing of Brian Daboll could happen. I just didn't think it was going to happen today. I thought the bye week was going to be it, but nothing in the aftermath surprised me with them retaining Joe Shane. I'm surprised they announced it right now, kind of put the whole conversation to an end. I think that speaks to what I've heard in the last couple of weeks about the organization's feeling around Joe Shane. And we'll get to Brian Daboll, why he deserves to be fired. I think we should have started there. But the organization really, really, really views Joe Shane as a prominent figure. He is the, and this is the way he's described to me, even before all this, was like, he is the head honcho with the New York Giants football operations. It is John Mara and Steve Tisch, and right below them, it is Joe Shane. I mean, this is in that statement, you saw them say Joe Shane will lead the effort. I think that speaks volumes. The fact that they've already come out and say it, they're telling you they value this guy. Now, obviously, I disagree with that, and I disagree with them doing that, but it is clear that Joe Shane has gotten a reset button from ownership, from the first two-year mistakes, and they feel like they are, and this is crazy to say because we hear this all the freaking time, they're headed in the right direction, especially because of the emergence of Jaxson Dart. Now, one other thing I heard, and we talked, there was that whole thing about Denver and them firing Brian Daboll after the Denver game. And I don't know if that's true or not.
I've heard that it's indeed true, but go on.
I can't confirm that like on my end, but I did hear that they've thought about firing him after the second Eagles game and the second 49er game. So that made me think that there's some validity to that and why an in-season firing was eventually going to come. I will say this. Ownership was ready, I think, to move on from Brian Daboll after last season. But Joe Shane was the one that kind of said, hey, we need to give this guy another opportunity. And I think that further proves everything that I've just said. And like, Joe Shane is a prominent figure in the Giants organization and will be for the foreseeable future. And as much as that sucks and as much as that's going to piss a lot of people off, that's just the reality of the situation. Brian Daboll, on the other hand, I think he deserved to go. I think it was painfully obvious that his messaging was not getting across. His coaching decisions were not working. The blown leads, the lack of accountability, the constant finger pointing. He had so much turnover in his coaching staff over the last 4 years outside of the Wink Martindale thing. So many position coaches are leaving. That outburst. And, you know, it was just clear that Daboll's time had run out. And even in that moment that this season where you're like, maybe this is turning around in that Philadelphia game, Brian Daboll still managed to piss ownership off by going into the blue tent and getting them fined. And essentially they viewed that as an embarrassing moment. So that's where we are. I think it was a deserving firing. I think now we wait and see what happens. I think the worst case scenario for the Giants could be they keep Joe Shane, which all indications are they've said they are, and a lot of potential good head coaching candidates tell them no thanks. But I think the reason why they're getting ahead of this and putting a statement out there that he's safe is because they're assuring not just to the fan base, but I think to the NFL world that this is our general manager. We believe in him. This is not going to be a situation where it was with Gettleman and Joe Judge, where they, you know, hired Joe Judge, who didn't have no, you know, alignment with Gettleman, and then they ended up, you saw how that ended up. I think this is more of like Joe Shane reset button. He's leading the search. He's hiring the head coach, and follow Joe Shane's path.
This sucks. This just straight up sucks. The Giants never learned their lesson. They're run by a group of incompetent Nepo babies through and through, between John, Steve, and Tim. Like, it really
don't forget Chris.
My blood. And Chris, although there have been some writers over the years who have said, questioned his actual involvement in the day-to-day. But sure, throw Chris in there as well. Just a group of people who have been handed everything, including like the success of the Giants that we saw 15 and 18 or 19 years ago. We don't need to dive into the history and who assembled those teams and the backstory, George, like, we don't need to do that. You guys, we've done it before. You guys already know it. But right now you are signaling, hey, we're giving Joe Shane an extension. Now, my big question here is, before we get into Brian Daboll specifically,
they might have already given him an extension, by the way. They don't, these things don't get out like
this. They might, but here's the thing. Do they just hold that extension in their back pocket? Because what I don't understand, like, you could very well wind up in a Jacksonville Jaguar situation, which I don't think will happen simply because of the talent that is on this roster right now, where no one wanted to work with Trent Baalke. So they fired him. They have to have some sort of indication that there is a large enough group of talented coaches that want to work with Joe Shane. At the very least, they're excited about the concept of coaching Jackson Dart, because otherwise this makes no sense. And maybe those plans have already been put in motion. We don't know. It just seems incredibly dumb to do this all over again. Fire Coughlin, retain Reese. Fire Joe Judge. Fire Pat Shurmur, retain Dave Gettleman. It's the Arrested Development scene. Well, did it work for those people? No, but it may work for us. Spoiler alert, I don't think it's going to work for us. And again, just to do this over and over and over again. And like, he has had some of the worst drafts in the entire NFL. Like, you give him credit for some of the talent that he's acquired on the roster, but the best players before this season, even especially, were Dave Gettleman drafted players developed by those coaching staffs. Like, he drafted Evan Neal 7th overall. Sure, Kayvon's coming to his own. Like, we can go through the list of these drafts and the draft bust, but 23
draft is awful. 23 is unplayable.
It's horrendous. And again, it's like, those were like his first draft too. Like, these were supposed to be slam dunk picks, and they've been anything but. And how much credit do you want to give a guy for hitting on high picks? You're getting these high picks because your team stinks. And then, all right, great. Like, Malik Nabers is unbelievable. I gave him all the credit in the world for not jumping the gun on JJ Nine McCarthy and Michael Penix and all that shit. But then on the other hand, Jackson Dart was Brian Daboll's guy. Joe Shane wanted to trade for Matthew Stafford, which I was a proponent of. But, and then after that, he wanted to trade up for Cam Ward, and Brian Daboll wanted to draft Jackson Dart at 3 and didn't, just rolling the dice, gambling with the future of the franchise, which I think we can all agree at this point, like, Jackson Dart is that dude. But if we're looking at the most important parts of the roster, the left tackle, he's not responsible for. Jermaine, he's responsible for. He was here for drafting Jackson Dart, although you can seriously make the argument that was Dable's guy, and he significantly gambled on landing him by trading back up and letting all those other teams pass over him. Malik Nabers is a 6th overall pick. All right, fine. The Burns trade, good. But the rest of the defense is a mess, and there's no depth. And the constant lineup decisions, the kicker fiasco. Why is Jalen Hyatt even on the roster if he's dressing and not getting snaps? Evan Neal, what's his purpose here besides just letting him sit on the sidelines until you don't pick up his fifth year option. He just goes wherever he goes. There's just so many bad decisions here that it's tough for me to be excited that Joe Shane's back. I actively was hoping that he would be fired and we could just hit the reset button, because there are a ton of reasons for prospective GMs to want to come in here. The quarterback situation has been solved. It's the most important position in all of professional sports. It's solved. You're going to get Malik Nabers back from injury. You have a running back in Scadaboo. You've got your tackle situation figured out. Like, these are all good things. And we're just going to let this guy lead the search before it's even over. And it's going to get worse, Weiss. I know, like, a couple weeks ago you were optimistic and things obviously changed a little bit with Jackson Dart's injury, but you're like, yeah, they might pull out a few wins. Well, part of the reason they couldn't wait until the bye week to fire Brian Daboll is, one, because of the blown leads, and two, all right, you now lost to the 49ers and the Bears, and before the bye week, you're going to lose at home to the Packers, especially if Jackson Dart can't play. You're going to lose, whether or not Jackson Dart's healthy, you're losing to the Lions. And then you got away at the Patriots against Drake May, who's looking like a top five quarterback, and Vrabel's defense and all that shit. Like, it would have been untenable to let this go any longer. And I'm sort of shocked it wasn't done after the Denver debacle. So, yeah, in a perfect world, the Giants absolutely wish that maybe they won one or two of those games and you just get to the bye and you survive, or you somehow make it to the end of the season, because that's the Giants way and you got to do it. You don't like firing people in season, but it became untenable, especially for the fans who needed at least a drop of blood. And now here we are.
I am now at a point where you try and game this out as rationally as possible when it comes to culpability, blame, responsibility, decision making. The biggest key for me has always been, do I understand what they're trying to do? I don't necessarily need to agree with it, but can I understand the point of what they're trying to do? Because that means at least it's rational. It's based in some type of ideology or principle that you can operate from, you can govern from. And in firing Daboll, you, like Weiss had said before, are signaling to some degree, A, that Shane will be here, that he is going to pick the next head coach. And you would hope that there is at least a baseline understanding of who they could potentially go out there and hire. But at the same time, what does it say about the potential candidates who would want to work with Joe Shane based on the way the last couple of years have gone? And you could say, well, it's some of the roster responsibility stuff is a teamwork thing. You know, the, what you had mentioned before about the kickers. Well, the coach and the GM need to. Well, no. Like, if the GM can understand that, hey, I'm putting the roster in a bad spot by not having a kicker here, he needs to be able to tell the coach, no, we're not doing that. No, we're not playing the Rutgers guy. We brought Ku in. We signed him to play. He is going to play. That is the end of story. So while I do think Dart is a really good trump card and you're going to entice people who maybe wouldn't have considered this job otherwise, I mean, we're what, 8 months removed from being unable to find the defensive coordinator to work here? And now you want to find a head coach to come in work here who's going to need to bring in a whole new staff of coordinators, both sides of the ball, from whatever tree they offshoot from. And then, you know, well, if you want to hire Dart, you want to hire a coach to work around Jackson Dart, that limits who you can get. Because in my mind, a lot of the best coaching candidates out there right now are defense first guys, or guys who have track records. Whether I know people don't love the names like Leslie Frazier or Brian Flores, but those are guys who are going to get serious considerations. Do you want to roll the dice on Mike McDaniel? Are you really that sold on Clint Kubiak in Seattle? There are a lot of guys who I could see being interested in this job, but the misalignment in timeline, both in general manager and coach, it matters a lot. I mean, Ethan, you know this firsthand. You saw the way the Islanders were operating, where the coach and the GM were on very different timelines. The Rangers are doing that right now, where Chris Drury thinks they can win right now, and Mike Sullivan is looking at a team that's maybe going to get 90 standings points. When you're not in alignment there, when your priorities aren't together of we're trying to win right now, we're trying to build right now, it becomes a real challenge, because whoever's going to come in here next year, the expectation is going to be you need to win 9 or 10 games. It's not we're trying to be competitive. If you are firing Brian Daboll because losing is not acceptable, which it shouldn't be, you are bringing someone in here whose expectations are going to be elevated. And you're going to tell me, who are you hiring that is going to get this team from the 3 or 4 wins they're going to finish with up all the way to 9 or 10? because that is a massive leap. And that is not just a matter of getting a few more good players in here.
Well, Nick, I agree with you. And just a more, and I'll let you finish, but a more simple way of putting that is also just, okay, we're keeping the GM because we believe that there's talent and a lot of it that's not being utilized correctly. Ergo, ipso facto, we hire a new head coach. That coach is going to be expected to win with said talent.
And I don't see that here right now, at least right now.
The talent conversation is more so about player development than it is about like, oh, we have talent that's ready to win now.
I think it's very much both. Because we've seen the former plenty, and not just under this regime, like just the absolute failure to develop these guys either period or in a timely enough fashion to make an impact for the regime that's drafting them. 100%. But you look at this line, like Abdul Carter, all right, fine. A guy that probably needs a little bit more development. But Kayvon, at this point, should be good. Brian Burns, like he's a stud. Like that's talent right there. Dexter Lawrence, that's talent right there. Andrew Thomas, that's talent that's already been developed. So I think it's a bit of both, 100%.
Yeah, certainly. But I think the main issue with the head coach was that the lack of player development. Like there are still people in that front office that believes Deontay Banks like can develop into a
crazy
starting caliber cornerback. Like they believe he has the tools. Now that's not the same for Jalin Hyatt and Evan Neal, right? But they still believe that. I think the main thing here that what the organization is going to sell to these head coaching candidates is like this general manager A is leading the search. B, he's the reason we gave Brian Daboll a fourth year. He went to bat for Brian Daboll. You know, he wasn't somebody that said, you know, get rid of him. On top of that, in the front office, and I kept hearing this, like this is his show. Like he is in complete control of this. And there's not going to be like ownership meddling. Now, obviously, it's tough to believe that when you look at where the nephew is in the front office and how Chris Mara's always on these pro days, right?
And that's my issue, and maybe you can quell some of these concerns here. But from my perspective, it's like you have a guy who is young, first-time NFL GM, who I believe internally has played the politics perfectly to his advantage. Just he is sucking up to the right people who will have his back during the hard times, the Chris's, the Tim's, so that, yeah, if John Mara is frustrated or Steve Tisch is frustrated, because remember, this is a guy, this is an outside hire. This is not someone that they were overly familiar with. And he did do some very radical things that we know publicly were not seen well, I'll say, by John Mara, the Saquon deal. And I guess you could argue Daniel Jones' success this year, regardless of whether or not they were in fact the right decisions. I'm just saying how they were viewed by John Mara and Steve Tisch. So you have a guy who has won absolutely nothing outside of his first year, who is an outside hire. How did he gain this sort of trust? Made some very unpopular moves. Like how you can't just tell me that in a vacuum, John Mara is like, yes, 100%. I trust him. He's my guy, without any sort of internal politics playing a part in that, when we know that historically they have.
I'm sure there is some internal politics. I think, first of all, the fact that Tim McDonald is the vice president of player personnel is a huge political move.
Someone would have hired him, Weiss. Someone would have
poached him. That is a huge political move. But here's what I think is. I think ownership looked at his process and the changes that he brought in. And even though the results weren't there the first couple years, or haven't been there so far from the first couple of years, they believe the last 2 years have, with the same process, have garnered some better results. And again, it's a lot bigger than the draft classes. It's a lot bigger than, you know, the free agent moves. He
upgraded from a Wii to an Xbox controller.
And that matters to that organization, I guess, to the point where they're, you know, have this much faith in him. But there is the level of concern that I have is, are you going to miss out? Because here's the thing. The Giants right now, even with keeping Joe Shane, I believe is a very desirable job because of the quarterback. and because of some of the young talent that they have. Like the team has
and the a left tackle.
They have a left tackle. They have good edge rushers. They have a good young quarterback. They have Malik Nabers, even though he's coming off an injury. Like they have some sort of a foundation there. Where they're lacking is they don't have enough good players. They don't have enough good depth, right? And so I do think it is still a desirable job for, you know, some of the top candidates that I'm sure will hear their names. The only concern that I have is if you're giving Joe Shane a reset and an autonomy to go and find that head coach like I was told that they are, the worst thing you can do now is meddle with the head coaching search. If you're giving him a reset button, let him go pick another head coach. Just let him go do it.
I agree.
Don't get in there and do what you did with Dave Gettleman and you matched him with Joe Judge and that didn't work from the start. And then you matched him with Jason Garrett and it was just like that. It was set up to fail. If you're giving Joe Shane a reset button, then it has to be a real reset button. You have to essentially wipe away his sins of the past and let him go hire another head coach, just like the Titans are going to go let Borgonzi hire a head coach. You have to let it happen. Them meddling will make this thing a lot worse, and especially because you got a young quarterback on a rookie deal that you're going to have to start building better around, who I think can have you competing fairly quickly.
And off of that, it's a really good point you make there, Weiss, because we see this happen all of the time in sports where, and frankly, in every walk of life, where you make the desperate plea of, I can fix this, you just got to give me some more time, but it's on conditions, it's on stipulations, and those stipulations make it untenable to do the job you're trying to do. If Joe Shane genuinely is going to do a better job, he's going to get the mulligan, he's going to get the hire a second coach, which not all GMs do. You know, there are some GMs who, if they work 4 years with a head coach, they both go out together. It would have been perfectly reasonable for them to both be fired right now or at the end of the season and figure out where the organization was going to go from here. But in giving him this mulligan, you have to be genuine in it. And you need to allow him to run this coaching search and assembling the support staff and continuing to allow him to remake the roster unimpeded. There cannot be any shenanigans. There cannot be, well, we want to have input in this conversation. No, you are giving him the decision here. If you don't want him to have that full autonomy, you don't trust him to make the decision, you should not have kept him. Exactly. Right. That's right. Where it comes down to. And this scares the hell out of me. I don't necessarily trust Joe Shane's decision making, nor do I think there is a slam dunk head coaching candidate out there that can slide right in and get the most out of Jackson Dart. But I, at the very least, I'm encouraged that even if it's just optics, and you know, you, Ethan had said before, we need something, we need some drop of blood. Losing the fourth time on the road with a 10-point lead in the same season is unconscionable. And the thing is, as soon as Russ came in the game, you knew they were losing. It's not just a, well, they could hang on. They could, no. As soon as Russ came in the game at 17-10, I knew they were losing the game.
Knew it was over.
There was not a question in my mind that the Giants would find a way to lose. And
the game's on my mother-in-law's here. I the second that Russ comes in, I go, they're losing. She's like, oh, how do you, they're winning? What do you mean? They're losing this game. Some people just don't understand.
The game was the way they lost was so embarrassing because it was like 350 something left and it was 20-10. The Bears took the lead with like a minute and 40 left. It wasn't even like a last second in the final second touchdown. They overcame a 10-point deficit, scored two touchdowns in a row, and they still left like a minute 40 on the clock for the Giants.
Yeah. But you knew it was over.
Yeah. I mean, what? Russ had the one dump off to Singletary. That was the only positive play in all the drives he was in the game, right? Every other drive, they lost yards.
And this is another mistake of the coaching staff. Look,
Winston's got to be the backup. Yeah, Winston has to be the backup.
That should have been done.
It's going to be Kafka's first move.
The moment you went to Jackson Dart was you had to make Winston the backup. They didn't do it. And again, unless somebody reports otherwise, I'm thinking that's a coaching decision, right? What I put on Joe Shane is like, at some point you should have came in there as a general manager and said, listen.
Cut the shit.
Yeah, same Russ, thing like, with the kicker. Same yeah, thing like, with the kicker.
Like we, I need to get a kicker out there. And then listen, Daboll, we got to make Jameis the backup, and we're going to release thing. The fact that Shane kept Hyatt on board again, the Hyatt stuff is so confusing to me because it seems like every week they're bringing up a practice squad wide receiver, and that wide receiver plays over Jalen Hyatt. So it's like, why is Hyatt even on the roster if every week you're calling up another receiver off the practice squad? The Evan Neal thing, again, it's confusing to me. Evan Neal is not even the backup interior offensive lineman. He's like he's behind Aaron Steine. So again, it's like what are we doing here? And then Deontay Banks.
That's not a serious football player. He can't be on the field.
I for the life of me, I don't understand. I understand people are like, well, they still believe he can be, and that's fine. You can believe that, but at what point is it like the results, like what he's putting out on film, like the effort, like the fact that he's drawing penalties? Like, when are we going to start judging people by results here? Like, when is that going to matter? Is it going to be like year five of the player or year four? Like, when can we look at what the player is doing on the field and stop worrying about where he was drafted?
We got to run a meritocracy. Got to run a meritocracy.
On the field is just such a mistake. And again, I don't know if it was, again, unless we hear otherwise, and I'm sure there's going to have some stuff that come out over the next couple of days about, and we'll see the finger pointing, because that's what like they do best is point the finger. But I really, I don't care about, like, I know Daboll is probably a shitty guy to work with, so I don't really care about that. I want to know some of these decision makings of the roster, the kicking situation, the fact that Deontay Banks is still on the field, the fact that Jalen Hyatt and Evan Neal are still on the roster, even though they don't play at all. Like, I want to know who's calling, like, who made those decisions. That's what I want to know.
And it's an indictment of the general manager that he didn't at some point step in and say, no, we're not doing this anymore. I know Moneyball is kind of played out and cliched at this point, but there's a reason that scene's in the movie where he says you can't play, where Billy Beane tells the manager, you can't play Pena on first base. He's not on the team anymore. That's what they should have done with the kicking situation with Russell Wilson. No, Russ isn't the backup. He's not on the team anymore. No, the Rutgers backup kicker is not kicking today. He's not on the roster anymore. Jalen Hyatt is not in the game. Deontay Banks is not in the game. The roster management stuff is why I am concerned, because an authority figure looks at that situation, if you're Joe Shane, and can say, this is an opportunity. I can make the team better. I don't have to do anything. All I have to do is pick the right 48 guys who dress on game day, and I put us in the right position, a better position to win this game. And the fact he hasn't at any point done that is concerning, because
defended this coach, brought this coach back, and then is apparently on board with firing him mid-season after allowing all of this to transpire.
No, he was not on board with firing him mid-season.
No?
This was a John Mara decision.
Okay.
Yeah. This was a John Mara. Now, I'm sure he didn't fight for Brian Daboll as much as he did in the offseason, but the firing him this time, what John Mara and the ownership group was just done.
And with good reason. I mean, at a certain point, someone needs to walk around. You think about when garbage kind of stinks after sitting in the kitchen for a little while and everyone's a little too lazy to bring it out, take it out to the curb. That's kind of the situation we had at this point. The way they lost to the Bears yesterday is about as bad as it gets. You were playing good defense for the first time in a month. You held the Bears to 10 points. The Bears, who are a top 10 offense in the NFL, dynamic quarterback, great skill positions, good young tight end. You held them to 10 points through 3.5-ish quarters. And as soon as Dart goes out, your ability to move the ball dies. The defense spends almost the entirety of the fourth quarter on the field. No doubt you're going to lose that game. And we have to sit here, and now we have to go through the motions for the rest of this season and say, well, is Dart going to play? Does it make sense for Dart to play? Are they going to be able to fine-tune the offense to put him in a position where he's not getting his shit rocked every five plays? I mean, he's been in the NFL 3.5 months. He's been concussion tested 4 times.
Yep.
That's he's going to die. That is entirely untenable.
Second most hits among starting quarterbacks behind only Justin Herbert.
77 hits and 7 starts and was evaluated for concussion 4 times this year.
And we're doesn't include the preseason either.
Exactly.
quick, Mike Kafka. Do you think he has a legitimate shot for the head coaching job?
No. Nope. Shane is going to throw some shit at the wall when it comes to they will go for a splash
hire.
Do you think
he should though? Like, do you think Kafka, like, can he prove something?
No, I don't think so. I don't think I've seen anything from him previously.
I mean, he was a finalist for the Seattle job.
That's great, and he didn't get it. And let me just say, this is like his entire job, his only job. Actually, there's 2 things. Don't kill Jackson Dart and don't embarrass us. That's it.
So
that is the job description.
There's nothing he can do to win you over.
Nothing.
I don't think so.
Nor do I even think he wants to be here. It's got to be someone from the outside.
I always thought he didn't want to work with Brian Daboll, but I guess.
I think he's out of here.
Okay.
All right. We good? Final thoughts? We've got to wrap up. Okay. We'll be back next week. Talk to you guys soon.